Basketballs and ping pong balls. The next chapter in the history of the New Orleans Pelicans could take shape as early as tonight. Plus, it's game one, the Dubs hosting the Trailblazers. LSU baseball trying to gain some confidence in one of their pitchers. He'll get his first start of the season. Yes, indeed. Plus, all eyes on Tiger Woods, major number two of the year, starting this week at Bethpage Black in Long Island. All these stories and more today, Tuesday, May 14th, 2019.
Two pitch lifted to left field, and Ramon Laureano has hit the A's fifth home run of the night. A solo shot over the manual scoreboard, and Oakland is back in front 5-4.
And that ball's hit pretty well to right field. It sends back Cassiano, still going back, looking up. See you later! A two-run home run for Robinson Chirinos. And the Astros' lead is 3-0. Two homers in a three-batter span for the Astros.
Here's the pitch on Ohtani, and he swings and drives the ball deep into left center field. That one is carrying, and that ball is out of here. Shohei Ohtani gets a hold of one. That is his first home run of the season. It's a two-run shot, and the Angels have a 3-2 lead.
Some of the sounds from Major League Baseball, and good afternoon and welcome to Tuesday edition of the Jordy Helfert Show here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. The center, controlling everything, my man, producer extraordinaire, Clint Domain, back in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios, taking care of business. He's spinning the tunes, pushing all the buttons on another busy day for you and yours. LSU baseball has hosts its final midweek game of the regular season against the UNO Privateers today, as Devin Fontenot, who hasn't appeared in a game since his 10th inning unraveling against Ole Miss on May the 5th. Remember, LSU scored six runs with two outs, back-to-back-to-back home runs to tie it, and then Fontenot just couldn't find the plate, couldn't get an out. Ole Miss scored four runs. They win it 19-15, and LSU's getting him back on the horse tonight. No significance to Fontenot starting aside from him needing the work. And the rough plan is for Fontenot to pitch two innings. As of right now, if the season ended here and now, LSU would be the number six seed in the upcoming SEC tournament, and they would play at 9:30 a.m. 1 week from today. But we'll see what happens as their Thursday, Friday, Saturday triumvirate against the Auburn Tigers plays out. So we shall see about that. The KLSU coaches caravan was in Houma, Louisiana. Ed Orgeron amongst his peeps, amongst his people. And he used one of his people when he compared his quarterback, Joe Burrow. And they asked, who does Joe Burrow remind you of? And Ed O said this.
He's a quiet Bobby Aber. He's tough. The team believes in him. I played with Bobby. We knew Bobby was going to make the play. Joe plays like a linebacker. He's a hard worker. He's in the work first, in the work last. The biggest thing about Joe Burrow is his teammates and his coaches believe in him.
That's important. Joe Burrow said, I lost too much weight last season. I got to bulk up. So coming up in the program in about 32 minutes after the hour here in hour number one, Brooks Cabina of The Advocate was in Houma, and we'll find out what he saw, what he heard. A lot of talk about special teams. Everybody talks about the quarterback and replacing Devin White. You know who LSU has to replace? One of their best field goal kickers ever in Cole Tracy. And we'll find out about that replacement as well. The NBA playoffs, well, the draft lottery is tonight. And the New Orleans Pelicans can maybe shape their history a little bit if things fall their way inside of a hotel ballroom. As we'll find out what team gets the opportunity to draft Duke's Zion Williamson with the number one overall pick in next month's draft. The Pels find themselves with a 6% chance to land the pick. Those are better odds than if they found themselves in the exact same space a year ago. Last summer, the NBA changed the lottery rules to spread the chances out some. Before this year, the top three choices teams had chances of 25%, 19.9%, and 15.6% to land the top choice. This season, all three teams are at 14.5%. Trying to do away with this tanking thing. The Pelicans found themselves in a three-way tie for the seventh worst record in the NBA and shares its odds with the Dallas Mavericks and the Memphis Grizzlies. So, we shall see. And it's very critical as to see, there is a chance, it's happened before, where a team, where the Pelicans are right now, with less odds than their 6% chance, far less odds, jumped up and got the number one pick. It's very important, very critical to see which team gets the number one pick. And we'll see what David Griffin does if he's not on the phone immediately with the trade request. Anthony Davis for Zion Williamson plus. I'm curious to see where the Pelicans land and if they make a move with a team that doesn't have the first pick in the draft. We'll talk in hour number two with Jake Madison of Locked on Pels podcast each and every day. He knows the Pels backwards and forwards. We'll go over the scenarios with him. Meanwhile, focus shifts to the court tonight. It's game one of the Western Conference Finals. The Portland Trail Blazers, fresh off of their game seven win at Denver, where CJ McCollum was just ridiculously good. In fact, he has brought the mid-range game back in vogue, and CJ McCollum talked about his ability to drive, step back, and knock down the mid-range jumper.
Yeah, the mid-range jumper will never die as long as I play. It's a shot that I'm very comfortable with and a shot that is easy. You know, when you work on it, it becomes easy shots. I mean, Steph gets off a lot of threes. Clay, some of those guys can get off threes, but sometimes it's hard to get that three off. You know, you score at three levels. Like KD, he scores at three levels. You need to be able to shoot mid-range shots.
Shoot the mid-range game. That's what it's all about. You're going to get the three ball from Golden State. The question is, can you hit enough twos to offset all the threes that Golden State's going to throw at you? Again, no Kevin Durant in this one. So it will be the Steph Curry, Klay Thompson show tonight, to say the very, very least. It's a game of great backcourts. Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum against Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson talks about how his club is, they'd love to have KD back, but without him, they still have to stay positive.
The mind's so powerful, and just try to train the mind to deal with adversity and situations that are unpleasant, but make you better in the long run. That's what I try to do.
Try to do that. One of the subplots in the series, it's the Curry brothers. Steph of Golden State going up against his younger brother, Seth, with the Portland Trailblazers. It saves a lot of money for the parents. They don't have to go back and forth to see like they have been. They can just go to one game and watch both of them play. Here's older brother on younger brother.
He's beat me before. I just don't remember when that first one was. Like, there wasn't like a mark this day on the calendar type of day. It was just, I don't know. Maybe he has the answer. Yeah, I probably might have blocked it out of my memory.
So that's got to be a proud moment for mom and dad and a fun moment for the brothers. Meanwhile, Steve Kerr, we saw what CJ McCollum did. Steve Kerr hasn't forgotten about the other backcourt member. Here's Kerr on Dame Lillard.
Been one of the best players in the league for a long time. We know his affection for Oakland and vice versa. Everybody around here loves Damian, and why wouldn't they? He's a lot easier to love when he's playing in a different game and not our game. You know, he's so tough to guard.
So tough to guard. Game one tonight, game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. Milwaukee and Toronto comes up on Wednesday. So that's just some of the major headlines of the day. Again, Brooks Cabina of The Advocate will be joining us at around 32 minutes after the hour to talk about the LSU coaches caravan, specifically about that very important third level of football. There's offense, there's defense, but great teams always have great special teams, and a lot of focus and a lot of emphasis on Greg McMahon's unit. We'll discuss that. We'll talk Pelicans with Jake Madison. We'll talk, PGA Golf with Alex Myers of Golf Digest. The PGA, I love the fact that it's earlier. It's not golf's last major anymore. There was too big of a gap between the Masters, the British Open, the U.S. Open, and the PGA. They got smart. They don't want to compete against football. So put the golf major right dab in the middle of this. And with Tiger Woods hot, winning the Masters, there is a buzz around golf. And Bethpage Black is where this tournament will take place Thursday through Sunday. So Alex Myers of Golf Digest will give us the five names he thinks has a chance to win this thing. Is Tiger one of them? One of the more difficult courses you'll ever see. It's long. It's been cold. It's been wet. We'll find out from the expert, Alex Myers. So we'll take our first time out of the day. When we come back, State of the Union, LSU baseball taking on UNO. We'll talk about that next.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Seventeen minutes after the hour, D.C.'s Little Capital X on I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. It's my go-to stop every time I'm traveling down I-10, whether I'm coming from Lafayette to Baton Rouge or Baton Rouge to Lafayette and beyond. Everything that you need for your travels, whether you're going 5, 50, or 500 miles, everything for every age of your travel party. They've got it all, plus that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. It's the best cheeseburger I've ever had, and I've had a bunch of them. It's the best. They are noted for it. If you haven't tried it yet, you're really missing out. If you have, you know you want to go again. D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in the lovely village of Brobridge. Yes, indeed. Basketball news for LSU. Their primary recruit, Trendon Watford, says he will be announcing his college decision May the 20th. So next Monday, May the 20th, at Mountain Brook High School at 2:30. And on his Instagram account, he's got four schools in the hunt: Indiana, Memphis, Alabama, and LSU. And according to our basketball recruiting analyst Billy Embody, the crystal ball pointing to LSU. So keep your fingers crossed on that one. He would be quite the pickup and fill a position of need, even though I still believe that while Naz Reid and Tremont Waters are bye-bye, I believe all the other guys are coming back. Until I'm proven wrong, I think Skylar Mays and Emmett Williams and others are coming back. So we shall see. All right. LSU baseball tonight here on 103.7 The Game against the UNO Privateers. Pre-game show 6 o'clock. First pitch is at 6:30. And that first pitch is going to be coming from Devin Fontenot. The occasional closer gets the start tonight, according to Paul Maneri, yesterday. Maneri downplayed any added significance to Fontenot starting, aside from him needing the work. And the rough plan is for Fontenot to pitch two innings. Maneri said, quote, "It's not trying something. He didn't pitch this weekend. It just worked out that way. I couldn't take the ball from Todd Peterson on Sunday. It wasn't a result of a lack of confidence in the kid or anything like that. I love the kid. I believe in him. He just needs to get out there." Of course, the last time he was out there, there was that nightmarish appearance against Ole Miss. So, in his last five outings, 5 1/3 innings work, he's issued 11 walks, or 11 free passes, rather. 8 via the walk, 3 on hit by pitch counts. So, he just needs to get some confidence back. Meanwhile, injury updates for LSU baseball. And excuses are for losers. Now, I understand that. Boy, this LSU baseball team has had a tough go. Cade Beloso has been dealing with an ankle injury since last week. That's why Chris Reed started at first base this past weekend at Arkansas. Both Beloso and Reed worked at first base during practice on Monday. Take that for whatever it's worth. Jaden Hill, according to Paul Maneri, threw off the front of the mound on Sunday, what's referred to as a short box session, and Paul Maneri said he looked like a major leaguer. He is scheduled to throw a full bullpen session today, and then they'll determine what he can give you. Cole Henry went home over the weekend, threw under the supervision of his father, who was his pitching coach in high school. There is no concrete update on his status. Apparently neither he nor Alan Dunn had talked to Henry yet, but he's not ready to go. Maybe by the Southeastern Conference tournament. And now you've got Trent Vetmeyer. He's going for an MRI in the near future after leaving a game this weekend due to shoulder soreness. He remains sore as of Monday, but LSU is awaiting the test results at this point. So another. Look, and it's not like every pitcher has the same injury, so you can't just categorize them and say, okay, maybe we're working them too hard. Maybe their work between starts needs to change, but it's all different kinds of parts of the body that are bringing these pitchers down. And honestly, I don't know how much you can expect to get from a Cole Henry and a Jaden Hill now. They've missed so much. Jaden Hill's missed forever. Forever and a day. And Cole Henry's missed nearly that much. So how much can you count on them at this juncture? That is to be determined. To be determined. All I know is in the polls, LSU has dropped, and rightly so. Perfect game. They were 15 last week. They're number 20 now. D1 Baseball, they were 15 last week, number 19 now. Baseball America, they were 16, now 22. Collegiate Baseball, were 18, now 20. More importantly are the SEC standings and the RPI rankings. LSU's 15-12 in the SEC. They're tied for third in the SEC West, tied for fifth in the overall standings. Tigers are now number 22 in the latest RPI rankings, number 22. They've got 17 wins over top 50 RPI teams, which is the fifth highest total in the country. So we'll see. Very important pivotal series against Auburn, and it's a very important SEC tournament for LSU baseball, if they want to be able to at least, at the very least, host a regional. It would take a miracle for them to be a national seed. There's just no way. There's just no way. So, we'll stay tuned for that one. Again, 6:30, first pitch. Devin Fontenot on the mound, making his first start of the season. But it's basically, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets out there and pitches from the stretch, like he's coming in a dire situation late in the game for LSU. You just need to get him out there, get him some pitches, get him some work, and go from there. So stay tuned for that one. Again, K Can't overlook these midweek games. Blake Dean and his UNO privateers want to come in here and play their best and get a big win for them. Can't overlook it. We'll see the impact that 3-2 win on Sunday had for LSU. We'll see. Or Saturday. If that's the momentum that this group can feed off of and move further with. They got to get wins. Every game is significant from here. I mean, it's been that way for a while right now. But at least they get to play at home. And, you know, they're not playing against Arkansas on the road. That's a tough team. A very, very good team. It was just a dropped foul ball away from winning the national championship a year ago. So, and again, you know, so many people are out there criticizing Paul Maneri. And look, you're a fan. You have the right to do whatever you want. You really do. But to think that Paul Maneri's going anywhere at this point in time, that's just crazy. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So let's, again, before you make hasty comments and hasty decisions, you got to let this thing play out. And then we can wait and see. So I still think there'll be some wholesale changes on this coaching staff if this season doesn't go close any differently than what this season has played out to this point and time. So everybody's on Paul Maneri's case, but he's not going anywhere at all. And we talked with Ryan Terrio yesterday, who's calmed down from his diatribe, but still makes great points. Makes great points. So let's see. Let's let this thing play out, and we'll go from there. We'll take another time out here. When we come back, we'll find out what Ed O, Greg McMahon, and the rest of the LSU coaches caravan had to say when they visited Houma, Louisiana. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate joins us next to recap everything and then some. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. 32 minutes after the hour. Hope you're having a fantastic Tuesday. We've talked about this LSU coaches caravan, and they made their third stop on the tour last night. And look, I think Ed Orgeron could probably sell ice to an Eskimo, but I've got to believe where he was last night had to be like his most comfortable comfort zone of all. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate was there in Houma for the coaching caravan, and Brooks is kind enough to join us to share what he saw and what he heard. Good afternoon, Brooks. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, Joey. Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. Was I accurate? I mean, Ed had to be working that room last night.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's been working every room since he started in Shreveport last week, but obviously more comfortable there. Every table, he said he was going around asking people what high school they were from, and you know, and he knew all of them. He played them all back there. So I don't think he met any former teammates, but he was definitely at home, and he said that quite frequently when we talked to him afterwards.
We played a soundbite earlier about he did compare his current quarterback to one of his former quarterbacks that he played with in Bobby Hebert. How about that one?
Yeah, I mean, he's one to comparisons, and, you know, if people ask about it, you certainly get to it. But, you know, I think he, you know, wants Burrow to do the ultimate thing and win a championship. And, you know, we got it. What was interesting to talk to a lot about Burrow is, you know, other coaches that come along the caravan. Tommy Moffitt, the strength coach for LSU, told us a little bit about what Burrow wanted to do over the off season. So he told us Burrow found out during last season that he lost weight during it. And you know, if you're familiar with Burrow's career, he started at Ohio State and never played more than five games, and he played every snap until Rice last year because Miles Brennan was hurt leading up to that and couldn't play. So he lost a lot of weight, and he wanted to bulk up. He told Moffitt that he wanted to get into a new workout routine to kind of bulk up so he could be more sturdy throughout next season, and that's what he's getting to do. And, you know, obviously his injury to his arm, you saw it in the sling against, at the Saints game when he showed up to his non-throwing arm. It didn't keep him out of the spring, but it kept him from working out substantially, and he's having to play catch-up is what Moffitt said. So, I mean, he's not going to be super bulky, you know, 250 pounds. Ogeron said, you know, he definitely doesn't want that, but you know, he's going to be bigger and, you know, more sturdy throughout the season. So it'll be interesting exactly how much bigger he'll get.
Brooks Cabina of The Advocate, kind enough to join us. Assistant coach has come along. It was time for Greg McMahon, the special teams coordinator, to come on board. And everybody talks, and rightly so, about the loss of Devin White. I'm here to tell you the loss of Cole Tracy is equally as significant for a guy that took LSU football by storm a year ago with accuracy. He only made 29 of 33 field goal attempts for the season. So that is a huge replacement. Greg McMahon took center stage. How confident is he in the replacement for Cole Tracy?
Oh, he didn't even skip a beat when I asked him whether Cade York, the new guy coming in, would play right away. He's like, he's our kicker. He's our kicker. He's going to compete and perform. And then, you know, like, that's the expectation for Cade York. And you're right. I think it's one of the biggest keys that LSU has to replace next year. And, you know, Cade York could be even better. This freshman coming in, he made that 59-yard field goal in the All-American game back in February. So he's got the talent. He's got the leg. And, you know, McMahon had nothing but good things to say about him and loved his moxie. He loved his leg strength. You know, they did everything to look for this guy. And I think one of the interesting things when you look at where LSU's come in these past 2 years, I mean, Cole Tracy was the trailblazer. I mean, a couple of years ago, you know, you can remember the Citrus Bowl loss where they missed two field goals.
Yep.
LSU did, and that loss is 21-17. There's a story on The Advocate right now I published today about this, and I can kind of see the comparison in Ogeron's response to the kicking game to what former Florida State coach Bobby Bowden did whenever he lost in the early 1990s on two wide rights to Miami.
Yep.
You know, cost him probably two national championships, and he always recruited elite kickers from then on. Actually, one of my high school buddies in high school, well, you know, knew him. He was a little bit older than me. Dustin Hopkins wouldn't play for Florida State. So, like, he really went and looked for top talent. That's what Ogeron's doing right now.
Yeah.
You know, he brought in Cole Tracy and then Cade York coming in. I mean, this could be the change that, you know, if there's one thing that you don't want to lose a game like, it's in the kicking game and something where you can control by getting a good player. And it's worth putting a scholarship up for it. A lot of people just have walk-ons come in, and clearly Ogeron values that position a lot differently, and McMahon certainly does, having been with the New Orleans Saints for 10 years before he came to LSU, saw what it is with players like Will Lutz recently. I mean, that's a big one, but they're very confident in Cade, and he hasn't even showed up on campus yet. And he's got a lot of shoes to fill, but he's talked about that a lot himself, and he seems like he's ready for the challenge.
Brooks Cabina of The Advocate, he was in Houma for the LSU Coaches Caravan. They've got two stops left in Houston and in New Orleans still to come. But that's one of the big telltale signs that Ed Orgeron has learned from past mistakes in his previous coaching stops. Was the fact that he named Greg McMahon his coordinator, because they tried to do that coaching by committee thing, and that just didn't work. McMahon took over, and special teams have gotten a whole lot better. If we can just find that return guy, right? We've been spoiled with the Honey Badger, with Patrick Peterson, and I can go on and on. Skylar Green before that, Dominique Davis before that. They've had some great returners. Is Derek Stingley their answer to that?
Yeah, and before we get to that, too, I mean, the reason why Greg McMahon wasn't the full-time coach was because the NCAA, you know, didn't have 10 full assistants. So as soon as they changed that, he put that there, and McMahon was, you know, full-time assistant there. That's why a lot of programs didn't have full-time guys there. But, I mean, to your point, Derek Stingley is going to be a dynamic player at punt return. I mean, in his high school career, he had 15 kickoff return slash punt return touchdowns in his career. And there was a stretch last year where he had three consecutive games where he had punt return touchdowns. So, I mean, he will be, in my opinion, one of those great punt returners that we've seen in college football. But right now, you know, Greg McMahon, I asked him whether, you know, whether he would be at kickoff return or what are the kind of things about that. And in today's game, you know, the rule that started last year, the NCAA, you can fair catch within the 25-yard line anywhere and get the ball to 25. So he said with that change, it comes down to a lot about what your decision-making is. You got to decide, all right, am I going to get farther than the 25-yard line? A lot of the times the answer is going to be no. There's a reason why the NCAA put it there, is to eliminate the opportunities for players to go and get their head smashed. You know, that's part of the deal. So the big part of it is who's going to be back there and make those decisions and know are you going to get more than 25. And that takes experience. That takes knowledge. And he said Clyde Edwards-Helaire has done well with that. And we saw examples like that throughout last year. I mean, he took the opening kickoff against UCF for 72 yards. He's shown himself to be a pretty good kickoff returner. I don't know if he's going to be the dynamic one everybody thinks of when you think of LSU history. But right now, that's not what they need at kickoff return with the new rules. They really need is that punt return option, which there were a lot of struggles last year. Three muff punts, two of them by Jonathan Giles, another by Justin Jefferson. But Stingley will be, in my opinion, one of those guys who's going to return it for a touchdown next year.
He is Brooks Cabina of the Advocate. He was in Houma for the coach's caravan. You've been to all of these things now. What's your general vibe of LSU football among all the stops that they go to? What do the fans feel like? It's a whole different vibe than a year ago, right? When Ed Orgeron, all he could talk about, all he was answering questions are, who's going to be your quarterback? How are you going to manage that schedule? And, man, you're already on the hot seat. It's a whole different vibe now, isn't it?
Oh, I think that was the easiest question Orgeron's had in quite a while when I asked him if it was any different. He just raised his hands like, of course. And, I mean, you're down there, and he said that he found out, you know, how much of a difference it makes when you win 10 games, when you win a bowl game. The mood changes drastically across Louisiana. This is a victory tour for him right now. I mean, it's not the ultimate national championship parade and, you know, the Fido-Do and everything, but he's got, you know, a lot of people around that support this team now and see that there's something coming down the line in 2019 where they could compete for a national championship, if not at least an SEC title. You know, that's one of the things that they have now, and, you know, one of the main mantras they always had was to not listen to what anybody else had to say about them. It's going to be a little bit different for them now that people actually believe in them, and, you know, there's some of that can fill a team as well. So I wonder how they'll handle that going into the season. And, you know, they're going to have challenges immediately. They've got Texas in week two, and that's going to be a big matchup. So
no question.
You know, this is not going to last for very long. There are a lot of people that are looking for more from this team. So but right now, they're kind of basking in the afterlife still a little bit.
I think Ed O said it very best when he said, you know, we've had to block out noise before. Last time it was negative. Now it's all positive and great expectations. So you really have to block out the noise even more than before.
I mean, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. We will see. All right. So you don't have to travel for a little while. So enjoy your time back at home. And we thank you for the update, my friend. Great job.
Hey, appreciate it. As always,
you gaining weight on these caravans? Because I know the food's good.
Hey, I joined a gym immediately in the off season, my buddy. Like I could do it.
You're learning.
I was like, man, this place, I got it. You know, you're on the road a lot. You know, there's a lot of good restaurants. You can, you know, go find it. I was at, you know, Boudreaux's and Thibodeau's last night. I was like, all right, that's the one for the week, man. I got to write that off.
Yes, that's a great spot, man. All right, Brooks, go hit the treadmill, man. Hit the elliptical. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, man. You have a good one.
All right, bud. You take care. Ed Orgeron, again, we've got some sound we can play for you from Coach O in Houma. And he talked about some things. Yeah, we talked about special teams and all that kind of stuff. We talked about Joe Burrow bulking up a little bit so he wouldn't get down to a weight level where he wasn't comfortable. He's not going to become some Godzilla, but he just wants to put on some muscle so during the course of the season he can stay strong and continue to run the football. But Ed Orgeron, cut number two, Clint. talked about Joe Burrow and the passing game improving.
Joe's very smart. We're good for football. One scrimmage this past spring, we had 80% completion rate. So we get better on offense, we get better throwing the football. Joe's a leader. I think he's having an excellent year.
All right, so that's the positive. So let's talk about, Coach, what does the offense need to improve on the most?
Obviously, we went to the spread offense. His ability to change the plays, the line of scrimmage, his ability to keep the ball moving with short passes. We got to get better at intermediate routes and got to get better on third down. The line needs to do a better job of protecting, but we need to get the ball away quick so we don't get as much pressure.
Makes perfect sense. Get away quick, and you got to have wide receivers that can get separation quickly from the very good defensive backs that they have to face each and every Saturday in the SEC. Here's Ed Orgeron on what was last year supposed to be the strength of the team, the wide receivers. He talks about them now.
Last year, our receivers grew in footwork. This year, we've got to do a better job of catching the football. Obviously, we're excited to see Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Terrace Marshall, Stephon Sullivan, Dean Anderson had a great spring. And then we have two guys coming in, Trey Palmer and Devontae Lee. So we have a lot of guys returning. We need to get the ball to them, keep them fresh. It's a long season.
Yeah, give me those guys that can catch it 5 yards up the field and turn a 5-yarder into a 25-yarder. Give me a Jerry Jeudy from Alabama. Just make so they'll have that jugs gun or that machine that shoots that football out at a mile a second, and they'll just have to learn to catch. You got to have soft hands and catch the football. We talk about Joe Burrow, but you know quarterbacks are one play away. I hate to say it. Knock on wood. Knock on wood, one play away. So we don't talk much about him anymore because he's been a non-entity. He was injured most of last season. But here's Ed Orgeron on his backup quarterback, Miles Brennan.
Miles really turned it on in the fourth quarter program. He really grew. He got up to 210 pounds and became a leader. He was breaking down the team. You can see the excitement in Miles. Miles knows he is going to play this year. He's healthy. He's following Joe. Joe showed him a lot of stuff. But Miles is talented. He probably has a better arm than Joe, a better release. We'll see what happens.
All right, we'll see what happens. There's your LSU report brought to you by Hooters. Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway, renovated, new, improved, so much better aesthetically on the inside to go along with the great food, all the flat-screen televisions, all the great wait staff. They're there for you. Hooters just makes you happy. Yes, indeed. Watch the NBA playoffs tonight right there at Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. We'll be back to wrap up hour number one here on the Jordy Helfert Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Your source for LSU sports and Acadiana's number one sports station.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfert Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, welcome back. 51 minutes after the hour as we wrap up hour number one of the program brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets, 59 of them in southern and central Louisiana. They build so many because they bring so much, and people love it because you can find everything at a ShopRite Tobacco Plus store. I keep talking about my favorite one is in Dusan. Man, is it fine. It's like a smaller Costco. It's got everything. Prices are great. Food is fresh, and they've got every variety. Look, if you can't shop right at ShopRite, I'm telling you, you can't shop right at all. You just can't. Hour number two, we'll talk more NBA hoops. The Pelicans, it's the NBA lottery tonight, the draft lottery. We'll see who's in position to get a pick that could transform a franchise, depending upon who you get. And so Jake Madison will join us, and we'll talk the PGA Championship in Long Island, Bethpage Black, Tiger & Company. The PGA did a smart thing. and they moved the PGA Major to now instead of at the end of the year. It just makes sense. You keep golf prevalent and prominent four straight months. It's just brilliant. The NCAA has assembled a working group that's going to look into allowing athletes to make money from their likeness. How about that? We'll see if this thing has any teeth to it at all. But it's certainly, I think, a step in the right direction. So the NCAA announced this plan to discuss these possibilities. So let's wait and see. Let's not. It's going to take some time, and they're going to try and figure. They've got to figure out something along these lines. The days of you saying, "Yeah, but you get a free scholarship, you get a free tuition." Well, that's true, but with all the money being made, my goodness gracious, let's take care of those that are making these coaches all these millions upon millions upon millions of dollars. It'll be interesting to see what Michigan offers their next head coach, what kind of dollar figure they're going to offer the replacement for John Beilein, who up and opted out to go to the Cleveland Cavaliers. There's only one thing I can think about with that. I don't think it had anything to do with the NCAA FBI investigation into college basketball. I don't think it had anything to do with that. I think it's simply a coach who's getting up in age who decided, you know what, I want to do it on every level. He did it in high school, junior college, Division III, Division II, Division I. The only thing left on his resume that he hasn't tried is the highest level, and that's the NBA. I think that's what it was. He had flirted with some other franchises before, namely Orlando and Detroit, but this seemed to be the perfect fit because it's close to home in Cleveland. He doesn't have to uproot the family that much. It is, it's the perfect scenario for him. So we'll see. Meanwhile, Jason Kidd has agreed to be the assistant coach to Frank Vogel for the LA Lakers. Vogel's got a 3-year deal. Jason Kidd, look, he's going to end up being the coach of the Lakers. I can tell you that right now. Frank Vogel's just there. He's getting a paycheck. He got a $5 million a year contract. A 3-year deal, not 4, not 5, like most coaches get. He's just looking to get back in the game. And he did, and he's getting the money, and he's already got his replacement staring him down every day. That's just such a dysfunctional situation. My goodness gracious, it just makes no sense whatsoever. But better them than our guys, because Pels look like they've got it going in the right direction. Plain and simple. Pelicans assistant coach, Chris Finch, is a former D-League Coach of the Year. He's been with New Orleans for the past 2 seasons, works predominantly with the big men. He is interviewing for the head coaching job in Minnesota. So stay tuned for that. So again, game 1 of the Western Conference Finals tonight, with Golden State hosting Portland. You know, you think game 1 is the one game that you have the best chance to steal one on the road. But Golden State's been resting up a little bit. How quickly can Portland put that game 7 win over Denver behind them as they go to Oracle Arena? I think Golden State wins this one. I don't see much of a chance. I think it's Golden State, Milwaukee. Collision course in the NBA Finals. Hour number 1, history. Hour number 2, straight ahead. We'll talk more hoops. We'll talk golf. But we always start off with hot topics. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game. 103.7thegame.com. Come on back for another fun-filled hour.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle!
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two on a Chamber of Commerce Tuesday, the 14th day of May. Thanks for dialing us up. If you missed hour number one, you missed our thoughts on LSU baseball, and you missed our thoughts with Brooks Cabina on the LSU coaches caravan. Complete confidence in the new field goal kicker, Cade York, coming in to replace Cole Tracy. Greg McMahon says he's our kicker, and he's going to be great. We certainly hope that is accurate. We've got more talk about the NBA lottery and the PGA championship coming up in this hour. But first, as we do each and every day at this time of day, we take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, Mr. Clint Domain, producer extraordinaire. How are you this afternoon, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good, Jordy. It's a great Tuesday, especially with some news we'll get to in just a little bit that can wind up making the draft lottery even more intriguing. But we'll start things off about the Western Conference Finals later tonight with the Curry brothers facing each other. And you also had the KD, CJ McCollum beef dating back to last year when KD joined his McCollum's podcast and said you'll never win a championship. What's the more intriguing storyline for the Western Conference as a whole, the Western Conference Finals as a whole, starting tonight? The Curry brothers facing each other, or KD McCollum and that beef that's going on?
Well, we got to get KD back in there. I listened to it just the other day, as a matter of fact, and he was just like, man, come on, dude, you ain't winning no championship. He said, I know, but look, it's not fair what you did. It's not right. What you mean? It's not right. Anyway, that's very interesting. That certainly has more intrigue than Steph versus Seth, because Steph is so much better than Seth, although Seth is pretty good. But no, Seth had 0 points in 16 minutes in the Game 7 win over Denver, and all Steph did was get 33 in the second half to wrap up his series. So Steph clearly dominates. I feel good for the mom and dad, because they can just go, they don't have to go hop, skipping, and jumping around the country to watch both. They just go to one gym, one arena, and there they are. So I just don't see Portland hanging with Golden State. I mean, I just don't see it at all. I see Golden State and Milwaukee in the finals. Collision course.
That'd be great, Jordy. And I think Del Curry's just having a ball right now, enjoying what's going on, having both of his boys be competing for a spot in the NBA Finals and potentially a Larry O'Brien trophy. My goodness.
They can't lose. They can't lose. They'll be in the NBA Finals, come hook or crook.
Yes, indeed, Jordy. Yes, indeed. And I mentioned the NBA. The draft lottery is tonight. And definitely a big talking point everybody's been having is, do you have any big superstitions for the draft lottery to try and get the juju run in the way of the New Orleans Pelicans tonight?
No, I wish. I'm just not that type. I don't have rabbit's feet. I don't, you know, sit in the same chair, wear the same clothes, certainly change my underwear daily, I can promise you that. But no, I don't have any of those. Do you?
No,
you
I don't.
Have some of those?
I'm not superstitious, Jordy. I'm just a little stitious there. But, man, I have to say, Jordy, I don't think I have to be too superstitious about the Pelicans, because, my goodness, big news coming out the last hour or so. Shams Charania of Stadium and The Athletic.
That
potentially the New York Knicks, if they land the number one pick, and also Kevin Knox is in consideration for this package to get AD, Jordy. Would you be down with that?
Give me Zion. Absolutely. I've heard other reports. You know, there's the connection between Anthony Davis and Monty Williams. Monty's now the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, now that his season with Philadelphia has come to an end. And they're talking about DeAndre Ayton for Anthony Davis. I'm like, you better have a lot more than just DeAndre Ayton. So it'd be very curious to see where these ping pong balls fall and what the Pelicans do. Look, if I'm the New York Knicks and I feel like everybody else is saying that I'm going to get Kevin Durant and possibly Kyrie Irving, you get Anthony Davis, you win right now, because Kevin Durant's going to tell them, I don't want to have to school a rookie. Give me the proven commodity. Give me AD. Make the deal, and we'll be a legitimate NBA title contender immediately. So I think that would be what the Pelicans need from an overall standpoint. Build your franchise around he and Jrue Holiday. That's gonna put putts in the seats, man. You kidding me to go see Zion play?
Yeah.
That would be the best scenario yet.
Oh, it'd be the best scenario when you just look at it. But you're bringing up the Phoenix Suns, Jordy. I don't know if like AD would be down with that when you think about it, because of the fact that he was pretty much the guy, mind you don't know that officially, but almost certain he had a big hand in the reason why Monty Williams is no longer the head coach of the Pelicans after getting bounced out a couple years ago.
True.
So I think that might be him just like, nah, I think he wants to be like, bring me to New-. Also, I think Gil Benson knows if New York Knicks get it, because he already apparently has looked at some New York Knicks as potential scouting, possibly in terms of a trade, which would want to be huge, especially with the number one pick alongside of Zion Williamson.
We'll have a much clearer indication of some things now. We still have to wait till June, and we have to figure out what Kyrie's going to do, what Kevin Durant's going to do, and that could set some dominoes in play rather quickly. So a lot will depend on if teams believe that they will try a one-year deal, much like Toronto's doing with Kawhi Leonard. Now, Paul George is the exception. Everybody thought Paul George was going to play in Oklahoma City for 1 year and then bolt to L.A. Well, he doesn't want to play with LeBron James. He's happy in Oklahoma City. So you just never know. You never know. If Toronto makes a deep run and gets into the finals, how's Kawhi Leonard leaving? I just can't believe he would. Kyrie Irving is the catalyst for the whole thing. What he does, and all reports indicate he wants out of Boston, and Boston wants him out as well. So time will tell. We'll see.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of months. It's probably the most intriguing draft lottery in the history of it, because obviously you got Zion Williamson, you've got the potential AD trade and everything going on with Kyrie Irving. Even Terry Rozier thinks he could be out the door if the nucleus stays. That's just wild.
Blow them up. That's the way that's what the league is all about now. If you don't win the whole thing, you get bounced out early in the playoffs, blow it up. Start over. Change it all up. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. We'll see.
Yeah. Last one, Jordy. I am pumped up about something. You brought it up at the end of the hour, Jordy. The NCAA looking to or working announcing a working group to examine name, image, and likeness and be able to try and get that thing going. The big reason why, Jordy, is because that could potentially mean future student-athletes be used a lot like what they were back in the early 2000s with the NCAA college football games. You know that would be amazing. I mean, Madden 2020 is going to have a collegiate feature, at least somewhat, with no actual names. That way you can get away with it. But having this be a actual full-blown game again, if the NCAA working group kind of gets this together and is able to set things up for success, that could help out a lot of college athletes from all aspects.
A lot of college athletes, a lot of non-college athletes who love to play video games. So,
same here.
that's you. That is you.
There's a lot.
I never played one of those. I used to play Rock'em Sock'em Robots. That's what I used to play. That's it. What was that football game with the electric moving players that went like two miles in 10 hours.
Yeah.
What was that game?
I can't remember what it's called, but I know what you're talking about. I've seen people mess around with
it. It was like the flying V from the Mighty Ducks. That's all you could do in that game. Just form a V and try and go from there. It was like two walls hitting one another and nobody moved. But anyway, hey, if it helps the athletes out, doesn't take anything away from anybody, doesn't harm anybody, I'm all for it. So we shall see. All right, Clint, job well done. There's your
Thank
hot
you.
Topics for the day. Brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet every day. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef with you wherever you go, because I'm telling you, everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. Everything. More NBA talk. Jake Madison, Locked On Pels, next on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
the next chapter in the history of the New Orleans Pelicans could take shape tonight inside a little hotel ballroom. The NBA lottery will take place, and ping pong balls are going to decide who gets the opportunity with the number one overall pick in next month's draft. And we'll see where the Pelicans fall. So with that in mind, let's talk to the host of Locked on Pels, the daily podcast covering the New Orleans Pelicans. He's also the co-host of Locked on the NBA on Wednesdays. That's our good friend, Mr. Jake Madison. What's up, Jake? How are you?
Not too much. Excited for the lottery night. Should be a fun time.
You got your rabbit's foot, you got your fingers crossed, your hair. What are you thinking? The Pels only have a 6% chance to land the pick, but that's a lot better than the odds were if they were in the exact same space last year.
Yeah, they've changed it this year where you have a better chance now to get one of the top picks instead of it being a lottery for the top three picks. It's a lottery for the top four picks. They've kind of evened out the odds a little bit to kind of prevent some of the tanking that we've seen throughout the NBA the past couple of years. So, you know, there's still a chance. They don't have a great shot at number one overall, but basically they've got about a 25% chance, 26.3% to be exact, to land a top four pick. And there's some good players at the top of this draft. So either way, the Pelicans could come out of this looking pretty good.
All right. So all the talk around the NBA is everybody seems to think that it's almost a shoe-in, 99% chance that the New York Knicks are going to get Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. I don't know. I have no idea. I have no clue. If the Knicks get the number one pick in the draft, David Griffin's got to call him, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I wouldn't be shocked if the Knicks also come calling to the Pelicans, because I know they're interested in bringing in superstars. And it's New York, you know, it's the mecca of basketball. They want to put some star players on the court, energize that fan base, and make that franchise relevant, which is something that hasn't been for almost two decades now. So the chance to pair, you know, bring in Anthony Davis right now after the draft lottery by trading, say, the number one overall pick, and then it may make that destination look more appealing to free agents like Kevin Durant, like Kyrie Irving. No matter who ends up with the number one overall pick, I think the Pelicans will at least give them a call to see if they're interested. I don't think every team would deal that number one overall pick, but the Knicks absolutely. I think Chicago would as well. And there's maybe one or two others if a team really makes the leap. Certainly the Los Angeles Lakers would. So not only do the Pelicans have a shot for the top four pick in their own draft pick tonight, but they also have a chance for another top four pick through an Anthony Davis trade.
Yeah, that would be something. Do you make, let's say somebody is picking at number two. Do you make a call there, or is that play? I mean, everybody thinks it's going to be Zion Williamson, of course, and then Ja Morant, and then R.J. Barrett, Zion's teammate at Duke. After that, who knows? But are any of those players viable enough combined with something else to make a deal for Anthony Davis?
Yeah, I think so. I think you could potentially deal Anthony Davis for anything in the top four. You know, when you factor in other assets that you'd get back, other first-round picks that you'd get back as well in the future. So even if, say, the Knicks don't land number one, but they do land four, they have a couple of picks coming from the Dallas Mavericks because of the Kristaps Porzingis trade at the deadline this past season. So there's a chance you could build a nice package around one of those guys, particularly if David Griffin is enamored with a guy like Ja Morant, R.J. Barrett, or someone else who's up there at the top of the board, maybe a guy like Jared Culver out of Texas Tech. You've still got Cam Reddish there as well from Duke. So there's some good players up there. It's considered a bit of a weaker draft, but for the top 14 picks, there's some quality guys that should be starters in the league, and I think the Pelicans are going to evaluate all offers. And even if it's not number one overall, there still could be an enticing package out there.
I mean, stranger things have happened. Just because they're at 6%, I mean, come on. You never know, right? They could upset the world and get the number one pick. Come on.
We've seen it before. Go back, I think it's almost now like 11 years when the Chicago Bulls had a 1.6% chance to get the number one overall pick, and it hit, and they drafted Derrick Rose. You've seen it at other times where it's maybe the sixth pick that jumps up. So, you know, it's a lottery for a reason. It means that the team with the worst record isn't going to get the number one overall pick, and the fact that the Pelicans have a chance despite being seventh pick, you got to feel pretty good about that.
There's some names out there. The Cavaliers with the LA Clippers pick back in 2011, they had a 2.8% opportunity. They got it, and they picked Kyrie Irving. The Cavaliers again in 2014 with a 1.7% chance, Andrew Wiggins. So I'm going to keep optimism on my side here and just see. Do you think that Zion Williamson is the superstar that everyone professes he will become in the NBA?
You know, he certainly looks like it. This is the best prospect coming into the draft since Anthony Davis, and then since before Anthony Davis, it was LeBron James. So both LeBron, AD, and now Zion Williamson, I think, in everyone's mind. And look, this guy can kind of get to the rim at ease, score that way. He's a monster on the defensive side of the ball, blocking shots left and right. He's also just an electrifying player that's so much fun to watch, that can really energize a fan base. I think that's something you've got to factor into it as well. He's also not even 19 years old right now, so he's very young and still has a lot of room to grow. I think it's going to be pretty fun to see him in the NBA. I think he's going to be a great, great player in the future. You know, maybe he doesn't end up as an all-NBA guy, but if you get an all-star out of him, you're going to be pretty happy with him going number one overall.
Boy, that would put some fans in the seats at the Smoothie King Center if that was somehow an opportunity to get that kid. That would be some kind of fun to watch. I'd be remiss, Jake Madison, Locked On Pels, the daily podcast, if I didn't ask you about the four teams still hanging around in the NBA playoffs. We've got the Western Conference starting with Portland, fresh off of their Game 7 win over Denver, taking on the Golden State Warriors without Kevin Durant. I mean, if you like backcourts, this is the series to watch.
This is going to be a pretty fun one. I don't know if Portland really has much of a chance in this series. Golden State's still Golden State, even without Kevin Durant. And they kind of struggled in that series against Houston and still won it in six games, despite some pretty poor performances by his own standards for Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, those guys being quiet in some games there. If they play even at their regular level, I think it's going to be tough to beat them. But, man, you're going to see some scoring, a lot of three-pointers with Damian Lillard, who had just a scorching hot first-round series against the Oklahoma City Thunder. If Curry and Thompson are shooting, there's going to be a lot of threes made in this. And if you like fun, fast offensive basketball, this is going to be a great series to watch.
God, McCollum was so good in the Game 7. My goodness gracious. Switching over to the East, I mean, look, Kawhi Leonard has been sensational, but there's just too many weapons on Milwaukee's club and too good of a defense. I don't know how Toronto stays close in this thing.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. You know, the way they might stay in this is we've seen Kawhi Leonard maybe be the best player in the playoffs so far, even outplaying Giannis through the first two rounds. He's been outstanding for Toronto. But Milwaukee's deeper, and I think that matters in this series. Toronto's still a little bit banged up. They don't have OG Anunoby there either, whose depth on the wing would really help defensively and offensively against this Milwaukee Bucks team. Milwaukee can shoot threes. Giannis is still Giannis and is one of the five best players in the league as well. They have so much length on the defensive side of the ball that it's going to make life difficult for Kawhi. He kind of danced his way into the paint against the Philadelphia 76ers just regularly in that series. No one seemed able to get the ball off of him or to body him up and keep him outside of the paint. Now with all of these arms and the length that Milwaukee has, I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult, and you can slow him down that way. If he does not play at that all-NBA level that we saw him play at for a number of these playoff games every single time for the Toronto Raptors, they're going to lose, and you're going to see Milwaukee in the finals.
I'm with you. He's going to have to average over 30, well over 30. I don't know who he's going to get help with. Siakam, man, it's just good matchups that Milwaukee can come at them with. Bledsoe on Lowry. There's just so many matchups that favor the Bucks. So we shall see. Back to the Anthony Davis saga. Let's say that nothing really goes and the Pels finish up at number 7, and nobody wants to trade Zion. Is it still the Lakers and the Celtics, or are the Lakers out of the picture? Because what else can they offer that would entice the Pelicans now?
Yeah, you know, I think if that's the case, and say things kind of go worst-case scenario for the Pelicans in the lottery tonight, not just for themselves, but for the teams that maybe move Zion Williamson for Anthony Davis. It comes really, it mainly will come down to the Celtics and the Lakers, with the Celtics being the big front runner. They have a war chest worth of first round picks. Some young players that if you like them, hey, you can probably build a team around them. I will say for the Lakers, you know, that deal did get close to getting done. Maybe David Griffin and the new regime that he's brought in likes some of those guys a little bit more. Maybe they're higher on Brandon Ingram than Dell Demps and the ownership structure here in New Orleans was. And he wants to make a move for that. Or maybe the Lakers throw in some more future first-round picks, and that could maybe push a deal over the edge. But keep an eye on Toronto. If they came really close in this series and they're worried about potentially losing Kawhi Leonard in free agency, maybe going all in for Anthony Davis, bringing him up north, makes Kawhi Leonard want to re-sign and you have a better run at a title for next year. Maybe you look at a team like the Denver Nuggets who think their window is wide open. They need another player to really push them over the edge and get them to being a finals contender. Maybe they make a move with all of the young talent they have there for Anthony Davis. So there's some dark horses too, but if things don't go well tonight for New Orleans, certainly the Celtics are still going to be the front runner for Anthony Davis.
Get your rabbit's feet, your whatever it is that makes you, when you get superstitious, let's bring it out, and we'll find out tonight, because everybody's vying for Zion, and we shall see. Jake Madison, always fun. Thank you so much for your time and your talent, and we always look forward to talking with you, buddy. Enjoy the lottery.
All right. Thanks for having me on today.
Okay, buddy. That's Jake Madison, Locked on Pels, a daily podcast. Check it out. All the info you need on the Pelicans, who are doing all the right things so far, but all the right things are great. You better get talent, and that's what they're striving for. We'll see if tonight actually sets the stage for the beginning of a great future for the Pelicans. We'll take a timeout. Bethpage Black, that's where the PGA is. Alex Myers, Golf Digest, gives us the lowdown on the layouts and his picks next.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Well, it seemed like just the other day we were celebrating the green jacket going on Tiger Woods' shoulders. And now here we go. I love what the PGA has done in moving up the PGA to now, so there's not this wide canyon between major championships. And so the PGA Championship at Bethpage Black will take place starting Thursday, as we do each and every time there is a major championship. We get in our expert from Golf Digest, the one and only Alex Myers, who's kind enough to join us. Alex, good afternoon, my friend. How excited are you about this one?
Oh, I'm very excited, Jordy. It's a local event for us here.
Yeah.
Being in the New York area, obviously at Bethpage Black out in Long Island. You know, but as a crow flies, it probably only take about 30 minutes to get there, but with Long Island traffic, you never know. It could take up to 3 hours or so. So I'm going to be driving out early, coming back late, maybe staying over sometimes. But no, it's great. It's great course, great atmosphere. I've gotten to play it a few times. I've been there for other events, obviously. So it's nice when you know the course.
There is a sign as you approach. It says the Black course is an extremely difficult course, which we recommend only for highly skilled golfers. Really? You think?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, we only have highly skilled golfers this week, and it's not people like me out there chopping it up because it really is a tough track. Yesterday, Bubba Watson said it's the hardest course he's ever played if you're not factoring in weather. You know, I'm sure that you could find other guys out there that would feel the same way. It's just, you know, it's a long course. It's going to play even longer this week. Now, we've had so much rain. You know, the rough is usually pretty penal. I know that, you know, the PGA of America won't set it up quite as thick, probably, as the USGA would for the U.S. Opens that were here. But when you've gotten so much rain, it's tough to control that. I mean, we're kind of hearing already that the rough is pretty juicy. And, you know, the thing that makes it tough is there are a lot of elevated greens here. So, you know, you're launching the ball out of the rough. You're already not getting a lot of spin there. And then you're trying to land it softly on these greens. Now, you know, the greens will be receptive because they're wet too. But again, coming out of that rough, it probably is tough to kind of, you know, land it on those elevated greens. So it's going to be a lot of challenge for these guys for sure. And yeah, that sign, you're probably going to see that sign more than any other player in the field not named Tiger Woods.
Speaking of Tiger Woods, you've seen him at the peak of his absolutely unquestioned greatness. You saw this dip, and then you saw him rise like the Phoenix to win the Masters. So I guess the question is, how really good is this version of Tiger Woods?
I mean, he's up there. He's a great player. I think the thing that's holding him back the most is probably the putting. He's not quite the putter that he was in his prime when, you know, he was arguably the best putter ever for a few years. It just seemed like not only did he make more putts than anybody, but he just always made those clutch putts, that, you know, whether they be for par or a birdie, whatever. So, you know, the putting is not what it once was. He's lost a little there, but I think the short game is just about as good as ever. His iron play is about as good as ever, evidenced by he has the highest greens in regulation that he's ever had in his career. It's even slightly higher than in 2000 right now. He's hitting over 76% of his greens in regulation. You know, off the tee, he's lost a little pop. Obviously, he's 43. He's got the fuse back. However, he's more accurate than maybe he's ever been. So, you know, you kind of, you know, you probably take the pop over the accuracy, but overall, it's not too much of a drop off there. And then, yeah, again, you know, he relies on those irons. And then when he does miss, he's just got that brilliant short game. So, you know, again, I think we see him maybe miss that one or two, you know, 4 to 6 footers around that he used to just never seem to miss. So that's kind of the main difference. But other than that, he's pretty good right now.
Well, just like, I guess, anyone that gets a little bit older, I think he wins or is in the hunt because of his golf IQ, right? I mean, maybe he doesn't hit it as far, but nobody knows the courses and how to win better.
Yeah, and certainly we saw that at Augusta down the stretch, particularly when, you know, he'd fallen back a couple shots and, you know, he didn't press particularly on that 12th hole. He just found the green. He knew a par was good there. Other guys found the water. That's kind of where he made his move. And he just kind of hung around, played the smart shots, let the other guys fall apart under the pressure. And, you know, that's, I think he's thinking that hopefully if he's in position again this week on Sunday, he can kind of do the same thing. Obviously, Bethpage is a place where he's won before, back in 2002. In 2009, he actually got a terrible end of the weather draw, shot a 74 in the opening round, and then for the last three rounds, he actually had the best 54-hole score. So, you know, he came pretty close to actually winning in 2009, or at least closer than what the final scores look like. So, you know, this is a place that he obviously feels pretty comfortable at. It's a place where actually coming before the season started, I actually thought that this would be the major that he would win, or at least could win. So now that he's won the Masters, I guess I kind of have to stick with him as the pick. But, I think he's feeling very confident coming in, even though he hasn't played since the Masters.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest. This may be an unanswerable question, but Tiger and his girlfriend have been named in a wrongful death lawsuit. No one seems to be able to channel his inner golf when everything around him is chaos like Tiger Woods, but he's 43 now. This is a whole different thing. Does this have any effect on him in any way, shape, or form?
Well, no, I mean, yeah, you're right. It probably isn't an answerable question, at least until we see how he plays. You know, it's tough to know how close he was to that employee, a bartender at his restaurant. You know, it's obviously an unfortunate situation. Tiger was asked about today. All he said basically was that it was a very sad event, sad night that happened. You know, this when you own a business, these are the kinds of things that unfortunately you leave yourself open to. He's being. It's not that Tiger Woods personally is being sued.
Right.
I mean, at least as I understand, it's that his restaurant is, and that he and his wife are specifically named because it's not his wife. Sorry, his girlfriend are specifically named
breaking
because of their direct.
Breaking news, Alex.
You know, their direct involvement with the restaurant. Apparently even just a few nights prior, Tiger had been there at the bar with the guy. Who knows? That could have just been Tiger showing up in his green jacket like he did a couple weeks ago. I mean, so we don't really know the relationship there. But when you own a business, you are liable to be sued, obviously, for certain things. And just an unfortunate situation. But, yeah, you're right. It's also not the best timing, of course, for him to be answering questions about wrongful death suits when you're trying to win a Grand Slam. But you're right. If anybody could block it out, it probably would be Tiger Woods.
Well, we're 8 minutes into this conversation, and we spent 8 minutes on Tiger Woods. Who else should we be talking about, Alex?
Well, we've got to talk about Brooks Koepka. I mean, I always try to throw him in there now because I'm worried he's going to come after me and beat me up for not talking about him enough. But he, you know, and he deserves it. And frankly, you know, it's now become a running joke almost that he doesn't get enough attention, almost to the point where he's almost getting too much attention for not getting enough attention.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see where it's coming. I mean, last week I was on a conference call. Jim Nance was kind of talking about the same thing, saying, you know, we don't talk about this guy enough. He's won 3 of the last 7 majors. And he's got a point. And Jim Nance took blame, too. He said, hey, I'm one of the people out there. I should be pumping him up as much as anybody. But I'll go through a podcast. We'll make picks or this and that. We'll get to the end, and we'll say, wow, we didn't mention Brooks.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? And you know, this week I'm not doing that. I mean, he's right there in Vegas as a co-favorite with Tiger, with Dustin Johnson. He's certainly deserving. In fact, I mean, until he has a bad performance at a major, he really should be the favorite at every major. I mean, let's be honest, what he has done in the big events since the beginning of 2017 is just incredible. So, yeah, no, we should definitely be talking about Brooks. Definitely. He's the guy. He's the guy. I think, Tiger's right below that, but Brooks is the guy this week.
See, if I'm Madison Avenue, I'm telling Brooks Koepka, man, get a personality. Show a little fire out there. Pump your fist. Do something. Whether he makes a double bogey or an eagle, he doesn't do anything.
Yeah, no, and you're right. And actually, you know, we saw him start to open up a little at the beginning of this year, some of these comments about slow play, about this or that, and that was great to see. And certainly, at least within the golf industry, we're all saying, oh, good for him. He's got some, you know, he's got some beliefs, at least some thoughts. He wants to speak out about stuff. That's good. But you're right. It's kind of that on-course attitude, which, you know, unfortunately, it's going to be tough for him to change that because obviously that's something that worked for him as well.
Yeah,
so it's not like he can just become someone else. But what is interesting is that Dustin Johnson is that laid-back personality on the golf course too, and yet Dustin Johnson is just a much bigger star than Brooks.
Yeah.
So you kind of wonder why DJ has taken off in popularity and Brooks hasn't, despite, you know, kind of catching his friend at least and passing him at least in terms of majors.
Maybe it's Paulina Gretzky. I mean,
maybe it is.
You know?
That could. But Brooks has. I mean, Jenna Sims. You know, she's out there. She's doing her thing.
Golfers ain't got it bad, man. Golfers don't have it too shabby. That's all I'm going to say.
They don't.
Wow.
They don't.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest. We've taken this into a whole new path and direction. I'm kind of liking it. But anyway, what is the weather forecast? You've mentioned so much rain. I've seen tweets from you. It's going to rain for the next year on Long Island.
Sure.
What's the forecast?
Well, you know, it's actually where I live, which is more inland than Long Island, is a little different. Long Island could be a little different because it's out by the water, obviously. It'll probably be closer to what we saw at Shinnecock last year at the U.S. Open, a little cooler, pretty windy, you know, kind of that 10 to 15 constant mile-an-hour winds. The rain is, you know, it's off and on. I mean, it's going to be it's not going to be torrential, I don't think, any of the days, which is good to see because obviously last time Bethpage in 2009, it was a disaster. It rained, I think, 4 inches over 5 days. They had to finish on Monday. But the course, again, the course is already saturated, so it can't really take too much more water before maybe, you know, fairways become unplayable. So But no, I mean, yeah, you've seen me complaining, and I hate to complain about the weather all the time, but it really is ridiculous. Yeah. Not only does it rain every day, but now all of a sudden some cold fronts come in, and it's 45-degree high the last couple of days and raining. So, yeah, it's just been a miserable start to the year up here, weather-wise.
So is even par a winnable score in there? I mean, you're saying this is one of the toughest courses ever, but no?
Right. No, because these guys are just so good, and I think there'll be enough big hitters that will, you and I, we're looking at the scorecard, and I think the back nine alone is 3,800 yards, and it's a par 35. Jeez. And we're thinking, how the heck could you play that course? But the length just doesn't matter to these, big name bombers. They just don't care. So, again, if someone is hot with the driver and not hitting those approach shots from the rough, they will be able to attack pins. And then the thing that we haven't talked about is, as difficult as Bethpage is, the greens are actually not very difficult. They're pretty flat overall. So, you could see guys ramming in some longer putts. It's not like, guys don't have to be defensive if they have a 10-foot downhill putt. You could see guys be a little more aggressive than other places. And, again, because of the flatness, I think you will see some, more longer putts made. So I still think someone will probably get to, 8-under maybe. Let's say 8-under. But I'd be stunned if it's a double-digit type shootout.
You give me five names that you think have legitimate chances to win this thing, and I'm asking that for a reason, and I'll follow it up after you tell me those five.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll start with Brooks. We'll start with Tiger.
Okay.
Got to throw Rory in there because, A, how well he's played this year, but, B, the softness of the course.
Okay.
Let's see. I don't want to go all big names. I want to give you a couple more sleeper guys. I like Adam Scott because of, again, it's going to take a great driving week. And, again, the putting isn't going to be as important probably. And then on the flip side, though, I will take a great putter in Jason Day. I could see him, again, we're talking about a guy making a bunch of putts. I think he's ready to maybe break out. It's been too long since he's won. The only thing I worry about with Day, though, is that cool weather and, the back and everything else acting up and the immune system and everything else. But if he hangs in there, I could see him having a big week. So those would be my top five.
Okay. I like Molinari. I don't know why I like his game. But the guy we never mentioned, seems like he has fallen off the face of the earth, is Jordan Spieth. Yes.
I know. And what's so crazy is he is obviously trying to make some history again this week, trying to complete the career Grand Slam, which only a handful of guys have done. Mm-hmm. And yet, we're not really talking about him, and for good reason. I mean, let's be honest. The guy has been struggling a lot. Yes. I mean, since he won the 2017 British Open, he has not won. This year, he has finished outside of the top 20 14 straight starts. So just think about that. He doesn't have a top 5, a top 10, not even a top 20 in his last 14 starts. And he is statistically the worst player scoring average-wise on the weekend on the PGA Tour this season. It's not even that he's, played bad throughout the week. He's consistently actually played himself into contention or at least put himself in good shape heading into the weekend, and then he's just done nothing over the weekend. And it's the same story over and over again. Even in some of these events like this past weekend, in his hometown event, at Trinity Forest, where he's a member, goes into the weekend in good shape, does nothing over the weekend.
Yeah.
Just weird situations, comfortable playing partners, not a lot of pressure, and just can't get it done. So what's killing him is I've never seen a great player like this make so many double bogeys. He's making a fair amount of birdies, but then he'll just have a double or two double bogeys around that just kill his score. And, it's weird, and I hate to say it, but I just couldn't see him turning around especially at a course like Bethpage and under major pressure. I just don't see him turning it around this week.
Yeah, I have no confidence in him either. All right, one last question. You're in the golf business. Tiger Woods wins the Masters. What have you noticed about the game of golf and the appeal of golf from then to now?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to say that there isn't a buzz Whether you talk to hardcore fans, whether you talk to people in the industry, whether you talk to even the most casual fans, I mean, people are into golf, no doubt about it. Tiger winning, you know, again, you mentioned that this major has moved up. It maybe catches some people off guard. It happens so quickly. But the fact that Tiger is coming in off that major win, the fact that it's in New York, you just couldn't have better timing for the PGA Championship. They really hit the lottery with this scenario. And as a result, I think people are going to be really excited, especially if Tiger can, you know, shoot a couple good rounds and put himself in the hunt going into the weekend. But, yeah, I mean, certainly what Tiger's done, that Masters win, I mean, it has resonated throughout golf and beyond into sports. It's really been a pretty magical ride. And I'm actually kind of glad he hasn't played since because, if anything, it kind of builds up the anticipation to see him play again.
All right, look, I'll let you go cover the tournament. If you could do me one favor, just get me on Tiger's yacht that's parked out there somewhere in Long Island. Can you do that? I just want to sit on the yacht for a while.
I'll work on that, man. But, you know, it's going to be chilly out there on that boat. I don't know.
I don't care. Champagne tastes good on a yacht. I don't care what the weather's like. Alex, enjoy it, my friend. Thank you so much. That was terrific.
You got it. Thanks, Jordy. Take care.
All right, buddy. Take care. Alex Myers, Golf Digest. Back to wrap things up. After this, here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helpert Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Oh, welcome back. A lot of fun there with Alex Myers talking PGA Championship Bethpage Black Thursday through Sunday. Can Tiger get another one? We'll have to wait and see. Let's do our daily history lesson now because it was on this day, May 14th, the year 1967, an historic home run for Mickey Mantle. Hit his 500th home run against Baltimore Oriole pitcher Stu Miller in a 6-5 Yankee win. The switch hitter hit it left-handed, Mickey Mantle, career home run number 500 on this day, May 14th, 1967. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share your day with happy 74th birthday to Mr. Star Wars himself, George Lucas. Happy 35th birthday. Is Frank Gore ever going to retire? I mean, for a running back, you got to be kidding me. Now with the Buffalo Bills, made his mark with the San Francisco 49ers, but Frank Gore. And happy 29th birthday to Gronk. Rob Gronkowski. Retired? Or is he going to take off a year and come back and get rested? Yeah, we'll see. So happy birthday to them. Happy birthday to you. If it's your anniversary, happy, happy anniversary. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Don't forget about LSU baseball tonight right here on 103.7 The Game. Last regular season non-conference game as the UNO Privateers come to Alec Box Stadium, Skip Bertman Field. You'll hear it right here on Acadiana's source for LSU sports, 103.7 The Game. Special thanks to Brooks Cabina for joining us, Jake Madison, and Alex Myers. Tomorrow we'll tell you what happened in the LSU baseball game. We'll tell you what happened between Golden State and Portland and preview the Eastern Conference Finals, Game 1, Milwaukee versus Toronto, and anything else of significance, we'll have it for you. CD, job well done as always. Thanks to all of you for listening in to our partners that make it possible. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Until then, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.